Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host, along with Dr. Tim Hayes, and we welcome you to the show. Today is Wednesday. It's Recovery Wednesday, and it's March the 2nd, 2016. Our call-in number is 646-200-4169, and press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us, and we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because it really does make it your show. And if you would please, I do have Dr. Tim already on, but if Dr. Andraki or Gail or Terry or any of the ones that usually call in and open discussion with us on the recovery, if you would press 1, there's several people on the switchboard, and that way it will flip you up to the top, and I don't have to go scanning looking for phone numbers. So at this time, let's welcome Michael.
Well, thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. We're honored and blessed that you're here to join us. And today is Wednesday, so that makes it, for us, Recovery Wednesday, where we talk about recovering the truth of who we are. You know, if you hold a newborn child, you know exactly what a human life is. And sadly, the world tends to knock that out of us pretty early in our experience, through family dynamics that are based in something that's less than love. And so when we talk about recovery, we're looking to support people in recovering the ability to truly live out of their human lives, to truly live out of the active presence of love, and to move out of the fear and hostility-based world that has become so common about us that people just kind of think it's normal to live in that setting. And our offering is that it's anything but normal. We're not designed, literally, we're not designed for any form of hostility or fear. It's an anomaly. And so we're here to support people in freeing themselves from that anomaly, freeing themselves from that state of hostility and fear, and returning to the truth of who we are. And the truth of who we are is we're humans. We're here to live, literally, as the active presence of love and recover the capacity to live in that space. And, you know, you look around at the world and is it any wonder if people live in a world where they have no hope or knowledge or tools with which to return to the truth of who they are, and being restored to the presence of love, be freed of the gnawing pain of its absence. And when we're talking about love, we're not talking about sex, we're not talking about self-sacrifice, we're talking about literally the physiological presence of love that you feel when you hold a newborn child. I ran across I'm on a particular email list, and there's a reference to a novelist who according to this author, who she holds in very high affection, a woman named Willa Cather, has just tremendous insight into relationship. And she wrote a book entitled Not Under 40. And the author who's featuring this woman's writing from back in, let's see, what year is it? Back pre-1947, is speaking of her appreciation and for this author. And so her words are, and I'm going to share with you a little bit of her writing. In a beautiful appreciation of Catherine Mansfield's genius for conveying the complexities of human relationships, Cather, this author, writes, I doubt whether any contemporary writer has made one feel more keenly the many kinds of personal relationships which exist in an everyday happy family who are merely going on living their daily lives with no crisis or shocks or bewildering complications to try them. Yet every individual, and this is, you know, what this author's featuring as normal, yet every individual in that household, even the children, is clinging passionately to his individual soul, is in terror of losing it in the general family flavor. As in most families, the mere struggle to have anything of one's own, to be oneself at all, creates an element of strain which keeps everybody almost at the breaking point. So here's a, by at least one person, respected author who's saying that, you know, even in the happy homes, everyone's at a breaking point. She goes on to say one realizes that even in harmonious families, there is this double life, this group life, which is the one which we can observe in our neighbor's household, and underneath another, a secret and passionate and intense life, which is the real life that stamps the faces and gives character to the voices of our friends. Always in his mind, each member of these social units is escaping, running away, trying to break the net which circumstances of his own affections have woven about him. One realizes that human relationships, I just listened to this line, and that we live in a culture where somebody could think this was normal. And to me, it conveys the hopelessness of a life without the tools to resolve the internal dynamics. And of course, in this case, this particular author is blaming it on the family, you know, the whole denial game. Somebody outside, something outside is causing this. So one realizes that human relationships are the tragic necessities of human life. It's like, to me, such a bizarre thought when you realize, and, you know, we've been together, this particular family that we're working with, and it's intensive. The whole group has been here for, we're in day 14 now, the 16-day intensive, so we're winding things up. And the complexities, the conflicts, the tragedies held in one's mind have come forward in this space quite purposely, quite of the point of gathering to allow those things to come forward and to be freed of them. And yet, in a world where people don't have tools, they go to their graves thinking, oh, well, this struggle. And again, for someone to actually come up with these words and then for someone else to describe how beautiful they are, that human relationships are the tragic necessity of human life. They can never be wholly satisfactory. Every ego is half the time greedily seeking them and half the time pulling away from them. And then they have an interesting graphic. They have a man and a woman hugging, and they show a full shot of the man, and they show the woman in his arms, and they're kissing. Her arms are around him, and his arms are around her. And the lower half of her body is 4 feet away, running in the other direction. and that people can actually conceive of this as the normal state of things. So she's saying this is the state of everybody. And of course, if one doesn't have tools, it pretty much describes it, that relationships can never be wholly satisfactory, that every ego is half the time greedily seeking relationship and half the time pulling away from them. In those simple relationships of loving husband and wife, affectionate sisters, children, grandmother, there are innumerable shades of sweetness and anguish which make up the patterns of our lives day by day. Though they are not down in the list of subjects from which the conventional novelist works, these secret accords and antipathies which lie hidden under our everyday behavior more than any outward events make our lives happy or unhappy. And to live in the hopelessness that that author presents, that this is, that this whole idea of relationship is a necessary tragedy of human life, is just such a bizarre thought. And yet, so common, because people who don't have tools have no idea that the dynamics they're experiencing are internal to their own minds, and that when they live in denial, they're projecting those dynamics. And they think those dynamics actually have to do with their relationships. They think that the reason they're not happy is because somebody out there isn't doing something they should be doing. And, you know, I can certainly understand that one who lives without the tools to do that, and, you know, with it being Recovery Wednesday, and if you look back in the archives, and we did better than a week looking at the 12 steps, a set of tools for moving out of the insanity of that type of thinking. And, of course, we're correlating with the tools from the first century Aramaic, especially forgiveness process. But that you can certainly understand if that humdrum pain seems unresolvable and unrelenting, and one has to go through a whole lifetime with that, you can certainly see why people would be driven to drink, to drug. And yet, as one acquires the tools and begins to do the inner work of healing, the realization comes that it has nothing to do with relationship. That relationship is the gift that shows us the parts of ourselves that we are otherwise terrified to look at. And that when our minds, through denial, show us that, the humdrum pain of existence that most people have no idea is inside of them is projected into their brain's image of others. And, of course, leaves one in that space of seemingly hopeless relationship. When the truth is, relationship is this awesome sacramental gift that, yes, will show us what it is that we need to heal. And as we choose to heal, that relationship becomes the sweet space where the presence of love is supportive in showing up in our bodies, in our minds, and in our relationships, and in our worlds. And that the truth is that that's the gift. That's, you know, in the ancient teachings, they taught marriage was a sacrament. Personally, I can remember a time when I couldn't say the M word. And now it is the most awesome and sweetest gift that I have ever been given. And I thank you for that gift, Jeannie. And the support for moving into the use of the tools on a level where we realize that all pain is self-induced. And when I stop playing the game that my pain is about somebody else, then our relationships become that sweet space of healing. And the space where we can literally manifest the truth of who we are, bring about and into full expression the truth of who we are as true, actual human beings made of the stuff called love, designed to live as the stuff called love. So I'd like to throw that out as a starting point for the next level of conversation around this idea of recovering the truth of who we are, and of course, in many cases, recovering from some sort of an addictive process. And you know, in this work, we define addiction as the compulsive use of any person, place, circumstance, substance, or activity in order to keep from feeling what's going on inside of us or to keep from hearing and following our highest guidance. We've talked a couple of times over the last couple of weeks. If you want to see a synopsis of this in a really beautiful musical form, Alanis Morissette, you can go to YouTube and put her name in and look for the song Madness. And she just so whimsically and beautifully speaks of how she's so resistant, so unwilling to look at the turmoil inside of herself, and the thought of doing it, her words are, leaves me paralyzed. And then she speaks of how the madness in me comes out in the presence of you, but what I'm starting to realize is the madness in me still exists when you're not in the room. It belongs to me. And she just does a beautiful job of laying out the essence of the work and how, you know, it's easy to fold my arms and roll my eyes and blame you, but it's not so easy to take responsibility. So we're here to take responsibility and to gather friends and family and acquaintances in a space of knowing that that turmoil, that trauma, the deepest pain, when a safe space is created. And, you know, we've been, as I say, this particular family has gathered for this intensive, has been together the last 16 days, a few of us together for the last 32 days or 30 days, and just in a very intense living together, doing this awesome fresh and raw food. So purposely stirring and bringing forward those dynamics and, you know, each person in turn watching a rage, a fear, a terror, a power person dynamic come up, and then having a whole room filled with people who are there to spray love on them, to hold the space of love and to support healing is such an awesome, awesome gift. And at one point, as we'd gone through a particular process a few days ago, I'm sitting there just watching the space of these awesome, sweet, loving people willing to do their work and support each other. And it's like, what if every Saturday afternoon, instead of football, people, instead of watching people get their heads bashed in, a la watch the movie Concussion, came together in a space of love and support and caring and healed each other and created that space for healing, how different our culture could be, how different our whole world would be were we to invest our time, intelligence, money, and energy in doing that. And, of course, we get the blessing of getting to play with people all over the country and all over the globe. We're initiating some conversation with some folks in Denmark right now where we may head back and do some work with them again, having done that a couple of years ago. And the Royal Academy of Danish Royal Academy of Physicists having consideration of sponsoring a workshop on first century Aramaic forgiveness and physics becomes a possibility. So we'll see how that unfolds. But just the blessing of getting to be part of people all over the globe in their willingness to do that is such an awesome gift.
Yeah,
okay, well, let's say hello to Dr. Tim and see how the young man is. No hands up for callers at this moment, but Tim, how do you be, sir? And do you have any thoughts for us? Gail is here with us, too, so we'll get her thoughts as well and then see what happens with callers. I'm not sure about Dr. Andraki, but Stephen, if you're on there, if you push one, Jeannie will know it and be able to cue you in. Tim?
I'm doing quite well, thank you. It's an honor to be here once again. We had our Tuesday support group last night, and once again a group of 10 loving individuals that were there to support each other and watch the second half of Codependence to Interdependence, the older version, and lovely comments, and stimulated a lot of powerful work for people. And then there was processing, and we had somebody who's attending the group whose father had recently died, and when the family is getting together with all of that turmoil, it was just a lovely stimulus for questions and comments about what the power person dynamic is and how it can get stimulated and how I can use all of the various tools to dismantle those energy patterns in me and learn to just be in the presence of those people who used to trigger me and be able to do a different pattern of interaction, at least change my part of the pattern. So it was another lovely, wonderful evening, and an honor to be, I'd say a privilege and an honor to be able to participate with those people. And certainly goes to the same kind of thing you're talking about today with recovery, recovery from the patterns of anger and bitterness and abuse. And it, the brain cells that get registered are stimulated for me when you read from this author who said, here's one of the wonderful descriptions of family life and relationship life.
It's bizarre, and, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it sounds bizarre after my experience to this work, but I can actually imagine that I would have read something like that 15 or 20 years ago and just thought, yep, absolutely, that's what I was raised in, and that's what I've been trained in for my doctorate in clinical psychology. And because if it's life without tools, that's what's been happening on this planet for thousands of years.
Yeah, it's true. It's crazy. It's true. We've actually had one person at the intensive who has a sister that's been through a significant illness, and her husband being a physician, and that with years of work with these tools, that he's really the only outlet she has for really being able to have a healing conversation and really, you know, a space rather than looking through. And her husband is a high-level medical doctor in a university, rather than looking through the lens of, well, we're going to look at you in the microscope and see what's wrong with you, to actually be able to look at and have a space. And the gift that this gentleman is giving his sister of having presented her with the tools and used the tools with her, so they've just gone from, you know, some very conflict-oriented times to very supportive, loving, caring times, where now she has a space where she can really process and talk about healing and moving through the issues that are going on between her and a child and her spouse and, you know, childhood issues. It just, you know, what a gift people who acquaint themselves with these tools deliver to someone who otherwise is just kind of out there in hopeless and helpless. I was talking to someone recently that had invited on perhaps a journey with us, and it was, you know, going to be about 6 weeks away, and their response was, well, you know, we can't do that. We have too many doctor's appointments. We've only got, you know, that's only 6 weeks' notice. We've got this doctor, and you know, here are these people who are not very old, and their lives are about appointments with doctors. It's like, whoa, how bizarre is that? And, you know, there's some awesome physicians out there who create awesome support for healing, but for people to be locked into the belief that it's all about, and I mean literally their lives being consumed by that, it just seems so strange to imagine. Let's see what Miss Gail has to share with us today. Gail has been with us through the last, we're at 30 days of intensive. And maybe you'd share, Gail, a little bit about, and again, we certainly appreciate your skills and knowledge with the 12-step program and how, you know, every time a principle comes up, you plug in, oh, here's how the 12 steps have it, and it just, you know, rounds it out and expands the whole principle. So it's been really awesome. So maybe you'd share a little bit about your experience of the intensive and what you have on your mind for Recovery Wednesday today, and the perhaps some thoughts on, because I did, of course, mention this this article in the intensive, some thoughts on relationship as you view them pre and post tools.
Gotcha. I'm just grateful to have been a part of this process and to have been here for the last 30 days. And I know it's time to go home, but there's a lot of, I'm experiencing grief, for what comes up for me is grief in the ending of this. So that's where I'm at right now. And I'm just milking it for the next 48 hours that we have, the high vitality that is achieved by the food and the people that are here, and just asking Ruka to guide me into the healing that I need to do and complete for the rest of the time that I'm here.
Would you be interested in a mind shifter?
You know what? I brought everything out to my perch except for a piece of paper and a pen.
Well,
I brought out all my books.
Jeannie's got her phone.
Okay,
right,
perfect.
So
thank you.
Put her phone and text it to you. So how about endings are safe, healing, and wonderful spaces, and create openings for new levels of growth.
That sounds good to me.
And for those who aren't familiar with the Mind Shifter, it's one of the tools we teach, and the simple instructions would be, if that triggers something for you, would be to take a piece of paper, divide it in two, and on the left-hand side of the page, write the Mind Shifter down, and on the right-hand side of the page, write any and every thought that comes up in response to it. And the idea being that the mind works by resonance. If I say, don't think about the color of your car, the brain cells that fire are about the color of your car. So when I offer a mind shifter like that one, if you write it down, and then just allow your mind to start to do a brain dump and write any thought that comes, what do you mean endings are safe? That's crazy. Endings are painful. So then write the mind shifter again. Endings are safe, da-da-da. And just allow yourself to spend a couple hours in a quiet space. The phone's off. You're going to be totally, completely centered in yourself writing. And just spend a couple hours and let that trigger anything and everything about ending relationships. And then once you've completed that, then you go back and you look at, well, there's a topic for a worksheet. I'm going to do a worksheet on that one. Oh, I didn't realize that piece was in me. I think I'll do some responsibility communication around that with my, former or whatever. And, there's a piece where, man, that's so big, I need to breathe. And so just to use the tools on whatever comes up in response to that mind shifter, it's an awesome process.
It is. Agreed. Thank you for writing that down for me, Jeannie.
You're welcome.
Where I was going to go to with the essay that you wrote, or the introduction, or that piece from that book, was
right.
What I learned from listening to Carolyn Mace, and she has MP3s out about her book called Energy Anatomy, and I was listening to her before I came across your work, and she talks about the tribe, and she talks about going up the chakras, starting at the root chakra and going up, and she considers the root chakra to be the tribe chakra, and she talks about examining the tribe and the messages that we got from the tribe, and how that looks like going through the rest of the chakras. And so I thought that that was corollary to what you were talking about. And then I was also going to talk about or bring up that beatitude that I believe that you talk about, that talks about looking at the tribe or society and examining all those messages. And so I was going to put those together and then follow through with where that falls in the steps.
Cool. Well, the beatitude that that she's speaking of is the one that, through the Greek translations, we normally hear, blessed are they mourning for their wrongs, for they will be comforted. And in Aramaic, what it says is, a latent neural structure implanted by God to guide you to happiness and well-being becomes your conscious possession. You who love truth, who look into your errors in thought and the errors of your society, for you will be cured of mental stress. So the willingness to love truth enough to look at those errors would be a powerful, powerful tool in bringing forward the healing. So go for it.
Okay, good deal. It's my belief, and based on the research that I've done and research that I've heard other people talk about, is that the steps are the Beatitudes in Matthew 5. Of course, they are the Greek version of the steps. And the mourning part of that for me is about doing what we call a four-step, or the we made a searching and feral moral inventory of ourselves. And that is what we do when we do a searching and fearless moral inventory, is that we look at our resentments, we look at our fear, we look at our sex conduct, and we look at harms done to others. And it basically could come down to a 14-step process, which would be better to do with the sponsor or somebody that you trusted to be able to break each step down so it isn't as overwhelming. And, of course, then we talked about the confession and that sacrament, and that's our step five, is talking about that with somebody else. So we in the recovery community.
Hold the space.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was just going to add in that when you do this, and we were talking in the intensive for everyone who's listening, we were talking about the validity of the idea of confession. There it is in the 12 steps, and it's in, you know, a lot of the religions. And it's not about going to some magic person who has some magic power to forgive your sins, but rather that if you take it, you're not just going off and talking to anybody and everybody about your errors, because those who don't know how to hold the space, those who are locked into fear and hostility will tend to exacerbate the problems, but rather that you share the nature of your wrongs in a space where you've got someone who supports you in seeing through the blockage of your own mind and is able to hold an active space of love and therefore assist you in dissolving the errors. And that was the original thesis behind the idea of confession within the church, was that the priest or the minister or the rabbi or whatever, at least theoretically, had been enough personal work that whatever you had engaged in, rather than, you know, gasping with how terrible that is and condemning and judging you for it, would take a breath with you and be the space of love, because they've worked through those things in themselves and are able to hold the space to help you to dissolve the energetic roots of error and return to the presence of love.
Absolutely. Agreed. What I wanted to share comes out of a piece of literature called The 12 and 12, and it was called 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. This is official what they call conference-approved literature. This is written by Bill W. 15 years after he got sober, and his primary interest in writing this was to introduce the traditions into the Society of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he thought that the traditions were going to be dry, and so he added essays on the steps as well. And, I wasn't there, and I'm not privy to his mind, but rumor has it is that he wanted to make some money off this venture, and I don't believe he did. But that's neither here nor there. It's on page 53, and it's in step four, and it talks about our twisted relationship. It goes like this. It says, "It is but from our twisted relations with family and friends and society at large that many of us have suffered the most. We have been especially stupid and stubborn about them. The primary fact that we fail to recognize is our total inability to form a true partnership with another human being. Our egomania digs two disastrous pitfalls. Either we insist upon dominating people we know, or we depend upon them far too much. If we lean too heavily on people, they will sooner or later fail us, for they are human too, and cannot possibly meet our incessant demand. In this way, our insecurity grows and festers. When we habitually try to manipulate others to our own willful desires, they revolt and resist us heavily. Then we develop hurt feelings, a sense of persecution, and a desire to retaliate. As we redouble our efforts at control and continue to fail, our suffering becomes acute and constant. We have not once sought to be one in a family, to be a friend among friends, to be a worker among workers, to be a useful member of society. We have always tried to struggle to the top of the heap or to hide underneath it. This self-centered behavior blocked a true partner relation with any one of us about us, any one of those about us. Of true brotherhood, we had small comprehension.
Powerful. What an awesome insight and piece of writing. Yeah, that's, you know, the hope of possibility that's offered there, where, you know, with that piece I offered earlier, is like the tragic necessity of relationship is such a bizarre idea, but it's cool to hear that somebody back that was written in 1935?
1950, I believe. Maybe 1954.
So as far back as that somebody had the insight that, yep, we can do lots of drama and trauma, and it's ours, and then we can recover from that. We go back to being humans and actually be part of a cooperative, caring, sweet, loving family system that allows the space for things to surface and healing to happen rather than, and I like the way he speaks about the infantile demands that that we tend to place on others for our happiness or whatever it is. And that becomes the driver for suffering that is the key to undoing the suffering as well.
Absolutely. And I thought that was pretty cool. And I appreciate the intuition that I had to, hey, this ties in with all this. It would be good information to read.
Absolutely. Fits perfectly. And, you know, one of the things you were talking about earlier, and as I'm listening to your voice on the radio, you do have a great voice for radio and easy to listen to.
Oh,
so
thank you.
We're glad you're here. We're glad you're here supporting us with it.
I am grateful as well. I'm grateful as well. Another piece that I have comes under Step 7, and this is a smaller chapter, or I'm sorry, it's a smaller paragraph, but it pretty much drives home the same thing. And Step 7 is we humbly ask God to remove our shortcomings. And it talks about the chief activator of our character defects and shortcomings, which basically, in essence, what that means is our thinking errors. And it says the chief activator of our defects has been self-centered fear, primarily fear that we would lose something we already possessed or would fail to get something that we demand. Living upon a basis of unsatisfied demands, we are in a state of continual disturbance and frustration. Therefore, no peace was to be had unless we could find a means of reducing these demands. The difference between a demand and a request, a simple request, is plain to anyone. I thought you'd appreciate that one as well.
Right. Yeah, he's right up there on the idea of the goal. And, of course, that's as close as I've ever seen anywhere else in the world somebody coming to the first century Aramaic forgiveness. And he speaks of the reduction of demands, not exactly the canceling of goals, but you can't get much closer to that one. It's just right on the target.
Yeah, I'm grateful for the correlation and how close they are. And I'm especially grateful for the format that the Aramaic forgiveness process is taught and how much deeper somebody in recovery can go. I mean, I'm evidence of that based on my scores when I met you 10 months ago to where they are now and just the amount of work that I've been able to do.
Onward and upward, so, layer by layer, strength to strength.
Absolutely. That's all I have
to
offer. I'm complete.
Okay, well, stay with us, and let's see if we've got any questions on those points from any callers. Do we have anybody in the chat room with anything going on, or anybody with a hand up in the phone queue?
They want to know again what book that she was reading from just now.
Oh, okay. Excuse me. Then I gave you the incorrect. That book is by Bill, and it's 12 and 12. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's called 12 Steps and 12 Traditions.
12 steps and 12 tradition.
Yes. And it actually doesn't say... it says, a co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous tells us how members recover and how the society functions. It doesn't give him official credit on the book. And it also says Alcoholics Anonymous World Service, Inc. So somebody could go to the AA website and order literature from there.
12 and 12. Powerful stuff. Powerful stuff. And I like to reinforce every time we talk about it the surprise and the pleasant shock that I got when we first did the material on the 12 steps, and that the traditions originally came out of first century Christianity. And, you know, just listening to what he wrote there, it's like you can't get much closer to that first century Aramaic forgiveness stuff without getting right down to, and what we do is cancel a goal to engage in forgiveness. It's like, the more I hear of it, the more I see of it, the more the parallel with that first century Aramaic language is. So I can only imagine that the Oxford group, when they sourced their first 8 steps, if I remember correctly, must have been working with translations very close to the Aramaic, because it's so on track and so on target. And you look at how powerfully that changed the world, and it's pretty awesome.
Agreed. Agreed. And it was the 6 tenets. Those were the 6 tenets. And Bill basically filled in the rest of it, knowing the alcoholic mind and how selfish and how resistant we have a tendency to be. He knew that the tenets worked, and those tenets were surrender, which is our step 3, the step 3. And then inventory was step 4 for us. Confession is step 5. Restitution, which is our steps 8 and 9. Prayer and meditation, which is our step 11. And then carrying the message to others or helping others is our step 12.
Powerful. Powerful. Well, I wonder if we could slide in 4, the canceling of a goal, to complete that, which he's built the brain cells for so powerfully, of those demands and goals that people hold. And, you know, just to recognize that the key way into looking at the energetic dynamics that seem so helpless and hopeless in most people's lives is that when I have one of those demands he spoke of, I have a goal for someone, and I cancel that goal, not because it's a bad goal, not because it's an unreasonable goal, not because it's a goal I don't want, not because it's a goal I don't deserve, but the fact that when I load that goal in my mind, that goals are the drivers for perception. And that if my perception says you're the problem in my life and I'm in pain, I'm projecting the cause of my pain into my brain's image of you. And as Yeshua said 2,000 years ago, I must forgive from my heart or my unconscious the wrongs of my brother, the things I put into my brain's image of my brother. And the way that one does that, and it seems counterintuitive until you really get the whole picture and see how the mind works, is I look at the goal that's driving, the demand that's driving my perception. I cancel that goal, and when I cancel that goal, the perception collapses. And when the perception collapses, I now have dropped into what lies beneath, the hidden underbelly of my pain. And when I bring the presence of love, and if I can't do it, and I'm in quote-unquote confession, as we spoke, when I'm with someone else who is the space of love, then they can help bring the active presence of love to the underbelly of my pain, and my pain begins to dissolve, and I get free of it. And every time there is any form of suffering or turmoil or pain, that's the key way into healing it. And it's so simple once you comprehend it. And if you want to see, without us going into all the details of it, if you want to see a review of that process, actually a review of about 35 years of my work on the forgiveness process, a fellow named Bill Costantino, who is a corporate trainer, is an expert at doing PowerPoints, and he just created a really cool, awesome PowerPoint. It takes 24 minutes to watch. You can go to whyagain.org, and on the right-hand side, you'll see all the links to social media, and the bottom link is a little red button with a white arrow in it, and that'll take you to YouTube, straight to our YouTube channel. Look down the list for the PowerPoint, and the PowerPoint just takes literally 35 years of work, and bing, 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 bing. Here's the why and how the forgiveness process works, and it is just, to me, when you understand that, it is the most awesome and the core of the teachings of the man named Yeshua from 2,000 years ago. I feel so blessed to have interacted with it for so long that I finally come to understand it, and I'm certainly hugely appreciative of the fact that Bill took the time, many, many hours, back and forth many times, to create that PowerPoint to just give people a way they can refresh and refresh and refresh it. And literally, it's something that's so packed with information, you can watch it 50 times and you'll still be getting new things out of it. So thank you, Bill. And if you want to get that, just click that YouTube link or our YouTube channel. There are dozens of videos there. Once you watch that PowerPoint, you might then go to, there's a 50, I think a 51 or 52 minute video that is the first hour or the first 50 some minutes of the latest Why Is This Happening To Me Again workshop. So, and any support we can be, if you decide that you want to engage in that process, if you, once you watch that from YouTube, go back to our website, and there's a red and white bullseye in the middle of the page. Scroll down a little bit, maybe, and if you have to, and you'll find that bullseye, click on it, and it opens a whole series of explanations, a whole series of directions on how to utilize the first century Aramaic forgiveness process, and it is definitely a major key. Gee, do we have anybody with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room? Well, not at this moment. So let's go back and see if Dr. Tim has any more thoughts on our conversation since the last words of wisdom he had to share with us.
Well, thank you, and it's a delight as always to hear from Gail. And the brain cells that got resonated for me when I heard Gail talking about grief is up for her at the thought of ending this 16-day, or for her, it's a 20-some-day experience or more. What got stirred up for me was the termination process, the saying goodbye to good people without saying goodbye to good memories process. And I would strongly encourage you, Gail, to go to the primary people, if not everybody in the group, one at a time, and just having thought about it ahead of time, say to them, this was my first impression of you. This is what was most difficult for me in interacting with you. This is what made it so interesting or pleasant to interact with you. This is the life lesson I'm taking from this time with you. You know, I really appreciate you because of this, this, or this. Whatever those key qualities or interactions were, say them to the person, or at least write them out in your own journal before you leave, and watch the difference in your processing as you move through this termination and into the next phase of your life.
So, Tim, I would invite you. That was a pretty quick synopsis. That maybe you just give us a little more detail on. You know, it's an awesome process you've developed. I know you've worked many years on it. Maybe you could just kind of take us in a little deeper. That's powerful.
Well, my experience was, prior to learning that process, that when I came up to an ending, or I knew a relationship was going to go through a transition, I would have that grief that I would use that word or other more intense words that Gail used the word grief. And because of that, I would move away from acknowledging that the relationship was going to end or at least change significantly in format. And by moving away from it, I didn't allow myself to sit with how much I truly appreciated the person or how much I had learned from them in one specific area or another, or how much they were a challenge to me to stay functional or to stay loving or to be the kind of person I wanted to be. And when I made this learning, when I learned this process and I made myself sit down and actually catalog the key memories in the relationship, whether it was a half an hour interaction with somebody or a five-year relationship, when I let myself sit with it and actually get clear about what I valued most, what was the most difficult for me, what were the significant memories, whether they were pleasant or unpleasant, and how I learned to get through it and what I learned from going through those interactions, when I made those clear to myself, whether in personal journal writings or in discussions with the person, it helped me move through the pain and sadness and loss and into appreciation. And then I'd moved through the pain and sadness of the loss, and then I would no longer have to hide or run away from the good memories and all the life learnings. So they're there in the library of my mind for ready access, and it's just, you know, there's that two-hour workshop that's available on my website at cnhcounseling.com under audio, media and audio. And it's available free to just click on the website, and it's titled Saying Goodbye to Good People Without Saying Goodbye to Good Memories.
Thank you.
Awesome.
I think that will become very valuable. Thank you so much for that.
You're welcome. It's powerful, and I can easily see, you know, what resonates for me as I hear you speak about that is that you could do a transmutation of that into something to be used on a regular basis in relationship. You know, that whole process that you just described, I think would be awesome for people to sit down who've been together for 2 years and plan to be together for the next 100 years to do on a regular basis. And you know, perhaps letting go of the saying goodbye part, but just really being with, you know, the appreciations, the challenges, the acknowledgement, and the caring. It sounds like it would be a powerful process just to use on a regular basis in the context, especially of intimate relationships, would be powerful.
That's right on target, because that's how it was introduced to me, and that's what's in the two-hour seminar. I tell the story of how it was introduced to me, and then near the end of the seminar, a married couple who was in the seminar asked the question, how can you use it in the middle of a marriage, even if you're planning on staying together? And I said, all right, well, a simple example is you're married for a while and or you're married right away and you're going to have a kid. And you want to sit down and acknowledge what our life and our relationship has been prior to having a child and how it might be changing. And or we're married for a while and we've been living in an apartment and now we're going to move into a house. And so we want to do a processing about what our life has been up to this point and acknowledge what we liked and what was a challenge about it and what we're looking forward to or afraid of in moving forward. So at each transition point, whether, you know, it's a child moving away to college, then the married couple can get together and do this process about what our life was like when we raised this child and now what our life might be like and our hopes and fears of when they're moving out to college. So, yes, it's right on target. It's an active process to be used in relationship.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I can see it being a fabulous recommitment ceremony for people, too, as they go through their lives together. That would be a fabulous just setting, you know, people talk about getting remarried and or reaffirming their vows. That'd be such a sweet and powerful ceremony to do. And to invite friends, have a whole celebration of it would be, that'd be pretty cool to share with the community. And I think so inspiring for a community, especially, you know, young people who might go to a ceremony like that with someone who's been married for 20 years and to hear some of the challenges they've been through and sharing that with each other and how they resolved it. And sounds powerful to me.
Well, it has definitely been a positive, powerful tool in my life.
Fabulous. thank you for sharing that in more detail, Tim.
And I'll put a link on today's show.
And there's a link on today's show. If you go to the archives, there's a link to Tim's site, so you can listen to that two-hour seminar that Tim does. And I could see a cool little book coming out of you, Tim, that would be out there, too. Just framing a goal
cool,
for you.
A cool little one. All right.
Yeah. Okay, we're down to about 4 minutes, and Jeannie tells me we've got a caller, so let's take
them. It was a Skype caller that just disappeared.
Oh, Skype caller, you disappeared. Come on back. Come on back. We want to hear your voice. Skype caller, kick back in again.
It's probably Doug. He was the last Skype caller that one time that you got in there,
right.
And it was us. It was us down in the patio.
Okay. Skype caller, you're on. Give us a name. Where are you calling from? You're keyed in, Skype caller. Give us a name. Where are you calling from? We can't hear you at this moment. I think I'm hearing sounds. All I need is a voice. Are you with this Skype caller? I guess not. I guess it's not connecting. Something's going on. Microphone's not working. Okay. All right, well, we're down to about 3 minutes then. I guess we'll let that go. And any closing thoughts for you, Gail, Tim?
I'm complete. Thank you for a lovely show.
Yeah, delighted. Thank you for that input. That's the first time I've heard that completed description of that process, and that's pretty awesome. I think that's really exciting. Gail, any
I'd
closing
agree.
Thoughts for you?
I'm complete as well. I'm grateful to be a part of this process, and thank you for that ending piece for me, Tim, because that is going to help quite a bit. My tendency is to withdraw when I say goodbye to people. When you were talking another piece about saying goodbye to my grandmother before she died, we were leaving Christmas, and when I turned around to see her in the back window of the car, I knew that that was going to be the last time I saw her, and she died of a heart attack about 2 months later. So I think that's what's underneath all this. So this has been very good.
So maybe a mind shift along the lines of it's safe and healing for me to say goodbye. And, you know, what I find, especially with people passing, is that if I've resolved my issues around them, then I can join them in being to support them passing and be in delight and joy for them passing and moving to the next level of their eternal lives and be of support in that. If I haven't resolved my issues, then I'm going to have some sort of trauma or pain or grief or loss, and that's fine to resolve. And I think that an awesome gift you can give. I can remember giving this gift to my grandmother when she was getting ready to pass. She'd gone through a lot. She'd had probably 20 surgeries. They had her feet, toes off, you know, half a foot, ankle, knee, up to both knees. And I remember sitting with her, and I was just a young man at that point. She left many years ago, and just saying, you know, Grandma, you've had a full life, and it's time for you to go. And we cherish you, and we just hold a space of love for you to just move on to the next level of your experience. And I can remember the energetic relief that seemed to come from her as she was able to receive that. So thank you all for joining us. It's an honor and a privilege to be engaged in learning and teaching these tools and supporting the globe in being part of it. You want to join us for an intensive, our next scheduled intensives will be this summer at Heartland. The schedule's on the website under the link up at the top called Flyers. Take a look. Come and play. Love and blessings. Have the best year yet of your eternal life.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.
Continuously,
continuously, continuously, continuously.